I'm very happy to have the opportunity to give a talk in this symposium for wind laurels. This is the Geneva campus of Cornell University, where I spent a wonderful, wonderful time as a prisoner in his lab. And I had we had a productive project, and I worked a diverse system, for example, plant host attractant of Lagrulatus pomonella with charoline, and another host attractant of moss with Greek English rock, and six pheromone beetles with Paul Robbins. And the last project was a female sex pheromone of German cockroach, which was the most challenging and unforgettable project in my career so far. And this project led me to the Kobe Shaw Lab at North Carolina State University right now. And today I'm going to talk about the oviposition cues of the yellow fever mosquito. This is a principal vector of several diseases, including dengue and yellow fever. This slide shows the distribution of the dengue fever. And this is a very major public health problem in the subtropical tropical area, and spread out more than 100 countries, 2.5 billion people at risk, and 50 million cases are reported every year. And so far, supportive care is the only way to treat this dengue fever. Because of that, chemical spray is one of the, to control the vector insect is one of the most important way to prevent the dengue fever. And recently, the area is expanding, and some explosive outbreak have been reported in some area. So this situation motivates us to investigate the biorational approach to control this vector insect. So the female yellow fever mosquito need to get the blood meal for their egg development. And at the time, if the person had been infected by virus, she takes the virus as well. And after oviposition, she needs to get another blood meal to get to develop another next egg. So then spread the virus to other people. So we focus on this oviposition behavior, and we think characterizing cues involving this behavior could lead a novel approach to control this epidemically most important virus-carrying, egg-carrying female mosquito. And in the preliminary experiment, we found there are two different types of chemical involved in this behavior. One is oviposition attractant, which volatile, attract female from a distance, and oviposition stimulant, which contact and non-volatile, elicit egg-laying behavior from mosquito. So this is the outline of today's talk. I'm going in the first part, I'm gonna talk about the oviposition attractant. We thought this was not terribly difficult project, but I found this is a crap because regular technique won't work at all to work on this oviposition attractant. So we had to develop further improve the couple of technique. And there are three phases of technical development. And mainly that I'm going to talk about in this section. And this is an ongoing project, so we haven't figured out what the oviposition attractant chemicals are. In the second part, I'm going to talk about oviposition stimulant. These are typical oviposition site of yellow fever mosquito. Female prefer and attracted these small water container reaching organic materials, most likely plant. So first, we investigated what plant material produces a strong oviposition strong activity. We used a small cage biosis system, put the sample and the control water in a plastic cap, which has a sticky screen, and attracted the female trapped on the screens. And we investigated the various plant material, and we found white oak and bamboo leaf infusion showed a strong activity. This is a quite open infusion. But this system worked perfect, but throughput is very, very low and requires intensive labor. So we tried GCED technique. GCED technique is a powerful tool to screen antennal active chemical, the potential behavior active chemical. We had established a nice system in our lab for pheromone research, but it didn't work for mosquito blossom attractant at all. So we had to improve the GCED system. So to improve our system, we made an antenna stage for mosquito and use an insect cell culture medium for mosquito as a saline, and made a T-shaped sample delivery system so that the antenna preparation here get the maximum exposure to the chemicals coming out from a GC system. And also we made a lot of minor improvement. And then finally, we got a nice signal recording from mosquito antenna. But most important tip in here, Wendell, I learned the basic technique of EAD technique from Wendell, and I was further trained in a challenging project in his lab. So without that experiences, I wouldn't be able to further improve our system. So now we get a nice system, and we made that allowed us to work on the oviposition attractant aggressively. So we made a headspace volatile correction from wide open infusion, and screened the antenna active chemical in that volatile correction. And we found four consistent antenna response in the infusion volatile. So it was easy to figure out which component elicit the antenna response A and B, but it was not for C and D because there are several components overlapped at the same retention time. So I further purified this volatile collection using a couple of chromatographic technique and screened tons of fraction with this technique. And we found antenna response C and D in the HPS fraction 20 and 19, but still it was difficult to figure out because compound C and D are super minus amount in the headspace, and still there are a couple of components overlap at the same retention time. So we needed further purification. So the preparative GC technique is the way to go. But the regular prep GC technique using a glass capillary tube that Dr. Tom Baker showed in a previous talk has several issues. And we had to the this type regular prep GC technique won't work for our trace amount of oviposition attractant. So we had to develop a new improved and regular GC, prep GC technique. So we used a section of a megabore capillary column as a trap and made a connecting adapter to connect the trap and separation column. And using this combination, the recovery efficiency of our system more than 85%, even the sub-nanogram sample scale. And contamination almost free, and refrigerant is free or optional, and easy to use, and very inexpensive, and easy to modify. So now we get, I would say, the high-performance prep GC system in our lab. But actually, this is the second generation. I developed the original technique, prep GC technique, when I was working on the German cockroach project in his lab. So without that experience, again, I wouldn't be able to further improve this technique. So now we got a nice prep GC technique. So using this technique, we further purified the compound C and D, and finally we succeeded in isolating compound C and D about 3 nanogram. And GC-MS analysis suggested these are novel compounds, and amazingly, these compounds elicit antenna response of about 50 picogram. We are very excited about it. We isolated these chemicals compound as an antenna active chemical, but must be something for behavior. Now we need to figure out what chemical structure with this compound. NMR analysis is the way to go, but NMR analysis is a powerful tool to figure out the chemical structure of the unknown compound, but it requires tons of material, typically 100 micrograms. So to get the 3 nanogram compound, isolate the 3 nanogram compound C and D, we used 33 liters infusion, and it took 43 days to collect the volatile. So that means to get the 100 microgram, it would take 3,900 years. Impossible. So we tried a couple of different techniques to collect the volatile, and we found steam distillation works much better, but it still takes 15 years. I may be okay, but my boss, Kobisha, not gonna make it. So think about the NMR analysis. The NMR analysis, the concentration and the purity of the compound is the most important things. And this is a regular size NMR sample tube, and this is a capillary NMR sample recently developed. And using this capillary NMR tube, we can get a much higher concentrated NMR sample using the same amount of material. So we explored the detection limit of NMR analysis with this capillary NMR tube using a standard chemical. This is a proton NMR spectra of a standard chemical at a different amount. So we found 50 to 75 nanogram sample size were fine to get the proton NMR, and 250 nanogram was okay to carry out the two-dimensional NMR experiment, which is very helpful to figure out the structure. So we think safe side, 500 nanogram would be okay to figure to work on the orbifacial attractant, and it would take 28 days. My boss is happy with this result. But however, we get these results using a standard chemicals. The practical NMR sample preparation is a completely different story. We have to make an auto pure isolation and put the sample into the put the isolated compound into the capillary tube without any contamination and without any sample loss. So what's the solution? Yes, our high performance spread GC technique work for ultra-pure isolation, and recently we have developed a super low-tech NMR sample preparation technique. It is very easy. Collect a volatile in the trap and put the trap on the top of a capillary NMR tube and put the whole assembly into the plastic holder and centrifuge. Believe it or not, this works perfect. And again, he comes. I developed the original technique when I was working on the German cockroach project. So I just further improved that original technique fit into the NMR capillary tube. So thank you, Wendy, again. So we tested our, at the practice, we applied our technique to an insect attractant about sample size about 2 microgram. So I'm sorry I cannot show that the structure of this compound because of the patent issue, but we get a nice two-dimensional NMR spectrum using just 2 microgram, and we get the structure in 5 days. So we think the 500 to 1 microgram sample of the orbifacial attractant should work. So now we get everything. We are ready to go. We collected the volatile from a 1,000 liter white oak infusion, which should give us enough amount of material for the NMR analysis. And we have started purification steps, and we hope we'll isolate compound C and D soon. Okay, I'm going to switch gear to the oviposition stimulant, which is a contact and a non-volatile, and it elicits the egg-laying behavior from female mosquito. We use almost the same cage biopsy system, just without a sticky screen. So female mosquito can access to the sample and make a decision to lay egg or not. In the preliminary experiment, we found the oviposition stimulants associated with bacteria grow in infusion. And using a behavioral guided fractionation, we identified these chemicals. Very simple. And this is a dose response experiment of a mixture of these chemicals in the natural ratio. And this side is a control egg, percentage of egg in the control side, and this is the treatment side. And we found a mixture of these chemicals show the potent oviposition stimulant activity at 10 nanogram. And this is very encouraging. So in a summary, we focused on the oviposition behavior of a yellowfever mosquito and find the two different type of chemical involved in this behavior. And we have identified the oviposition stimulant, these chemicals, and now we are working on the oviposition attractant, these. And we hope we can figure out what the oviposition attractant chemicals are soon. And we hope a combination of these chemical cues can be a powerful tool to control this epidemically most important virus carrying and egg carrying female mosquito. And ultimately, we hope we can reduce the population of this yellowfever mosquito and prevent the dengue fever in the world. So finally, I'd like to thank to the my colleague and especially the Francis Webster and David Kimmel for their amazing performance of NMR analysis. This project is supported by NIH and Brunton Whitmire Endowment. But the last, I would like to express my gratitude to Wendell, who is still inspiring me from a distance. Thank you.
We have plenty of time for questions. No questions? Steven.
Are the compounds for the attractants, do you think they're from the plant or from microbial?
Repeat the question.
He asked me that the compound came from a plant or bacteria. I think it came from plant. So some way the bacteria decompose the plant, and then the plant start release the compound to the infusion. That's, I think. Yep.
Are there any other current biological control program questions for any insects that venture tropical diseases?
I'm sorry, I can hear you.
So you say one of the goals of this project is to try and control the vector for yellow fever, correct?
Yeah. I'm not really sure.
Repeat the question.
Yeah, so the question was, are there any other such efforts being undertaken in the world to use biological approaches to deal with vectors of various diseases?
I'm a chemist, so I'm not really familiar with the biological control, but some people try to control this using gene-manipulated insects or sterile males released to the field.
Any other questions? Yeah, there's one there.
Yeah, she asked that the virus infected mosquito and but infected and not infected insect change their response to the chemical? I think they don't, because I used GCAD screen blood-fed female and non-blood-fed female, but they don't change the response to the chemicals. So I think the virus infection is not gonna change the preference on the peripheral, on the antenna, but I don't think it's behavior.
Yeah, Wendell.
I know you can't say the compound because it's under patent, but was it a known compound?
The compound A, B, C, D?
Yeah.
Compound A is a known chemical, and the compound B is a known chemical, but it's just reported in It has been reported, compound B has been reported, but as not as a biological active compound. But C and D, we haven't known that.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.